In May, there will be a display at a news conference of a couple Kodachrome color slides. These slides are of the 1947-ish vintage, as Linda will tell you in a report. And it could show an amazing E.T. Absolutely amazing. Now, a few weeks ago, Ruben Uriarte, Noe Torres were on my program talking about Mexico's Roswell, and they mentioned this possibility. Linda's got a full report coming up on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Linda Moulton Howe with us. Linda, I hope I set this up properly for you.
Yes.
But it's going to be an incredible story, isn't it?
Well, I think so. And it began sort of with a few rumors and then some things on the web in the fall of 2014 when UFO investigator Tom Carey reported that he had a Roswell smoking gun in two color Kodachrome slides at that what he called an insect-like extraterrestrial body, and said that it was after an autopsy. And that insect-like extraterrestrial body was used in an interview in a UK publishing. The entity was then described as about 3.5 to 4 feet long and was described as photographed lying inside a transparent case. Now, Carey, working with Roswell UFO investigator Don Schmidt, contacted a Kodak company historian in Rochester, New York, who confirmed that, in fact, these two Kodachrome slides that Tom Carey started talking about were vintage 1947. The story behind the slides is that they came from an accidental discovery in 1999 of a box of some 400 color Kodachrome slides found in the possessions of a woman named Hilda Blair Ray, who died in 1988. She had been a successful attorney and pilot who back in 1947 was married to a geologist who worked in the oil exploration industry, especially in the state of New Mexico. Now, his name was Bernard Arthur Ray, who at the time was also president for the American Institute of Petroleum's Texas chapter. Tom Carey speculated to the UK's Metro News in November 2014, quote, "We think Hilda Blair Ray was involved with intelligence in World War II," close quote. Well, the many-color Kodachrome slides also included images of some rich and famous Hollywood stars and the politically powerful, such as General Dwight Eisenhower. I have one of the photographs at earthfiles.com in my report tonight. Now, historically, in 1947, President Harry S. Truman allegedly knew about extraterrestrial biological entities that were being studied by his MJ-12 Special Studies Group. Also during and after World War II, there is anecdotal evidence from a man working security detail for Prime Minister Winston Churchill that Churchill and General Dwight Eisenhower discussed during the war years the unidentified flying objects or UFOs that were flying rapidly around RAF fighter jets, and they concluded that the source of the advanced aerial objects were extraterrestrial, another word used was celestial back then, and that the world was not ready for such shocking news, especially when human world leaders had no idea where the extraterrestrials were coming from or what their motives were, as the UFOs not only moved rapidly in Earth's atmosphere, but appeared to jump from one place to another without any visible motion in between. General Eisenhower followed Harry S. Truman into the White House as 34th President of the United States with his successful election in November 1952, taking office in January 1953. He was a United States president who was seriously aware of the extraterrestrial presence, and he was complicit in the U.S. and U.K. policy of denial about all of it, while the World War II allies tried to buy time to figure out what they were dealing with and if it were a threat. Now, historically, the secret policy of denial was threatened by that July 8, 1947 headline in the Roswell Daily Record that said, RAAF captures flying saucer on ranch in Roswell region. That was apparently an uncontrolled leak that was a mistake. But government counterintelligence soon provided the weather balloon cover-up story that muddied the truth and kept the public and media confused about what to believe. And then, only 2 weeks later, on July 22, 1947, a document classified Top Secret Ultra and titled Interplanetary Phenomenon Unit Summary described three landing or crash zones in the Roswell region where non-human bodies and craft were retrieved. Paragraph 8 in the IPU document says, quote, General Eisenhower will see a showing of recoveries, meaning the bodies and the craft, sometime in late August this year, 1947, close quote. And paragraph 11 in the IPU document is about the bodies recovered at Landing Zone 2 in which, quote, their overall stature reminds one of young children. Will the two Kodachrome color slides, vintage 1947, show, when they are presented, an insect-like being or proportioned like young children? The alien bodies were said in 1947 to have a horrible smell. And one alleged 1947 military witness still alive has talked to Jaime Masson, TV producer and reporter in Mexico. Jaime is joining Roswell UFO researchers Tom Carey, Don Schmidt, Adam Dew, Carol Rosen, and NASA astronaut Edgar Mitchell for what they are calling a B-witness event to unveil the two 1947 Kodachrome slides in a 10,000-seat national auditorium in Mexico City on Cinco de Mayo, May 5th, 2015. Recently, I asked Jaime by phone to describe what he sees when he examines the two-color Kodachrome slides, from which he told me he's also producing three-dimensional holograms for the Mexico City Be Witness Cinco de Mayo event. Here now is Jaime Masson from Mexico City.
The color of the skin is in the picture, especially the one that was taken with a flash. You have to remember, there are two pictures, number 9 and 11. Number 10 is not in there. We don't know where it is. But the skin is pinkish gray, but we don't know when the pictures were taken. We don't know if the color is because of the decomposition.
That they may have been pinkish and that they were beginning to discolor in death.
That's something we cannot say anything that is not there.
Would you start with the head as you are looking at it in each of the slides and describe the shape and the size?
The head is very large. The eyes are bigger than ours. We see that one eye is not there. The other eye is there, close. One of the eyes was taken out, and the other is not. The nose is very small. It doesn't have ears. They are there, but it is not like humans. It's like little holes.
Is the illustration of the being with the long, thin, little arms, are those eyes based on what somebody has described the eyes were like, the eye that's closed, or what?
The position of the eyes, they are closer to humans, but at the same time, they are larger to humans. We don't know the color of the eyes because one of them is closed and the other, there is a hole.
So this illustration is speculation when it comes to the eyes.
Yeah, but they are larger than ours.
We know that Glenn Dennis's nurse's description was of a childlike entity. Were you surprised when you finally saw these Kodachrome 47 slides that you were not looking at black slanted-eyed grays?
Yeah, they were not the grays. It was something different. It was something closer to us, but at the same time, far from us. They are different from the grays.
What do you think is the difference between the generally described grays and this little creature?
Well, I say it's more humanoid.
It doesn't look like the grays, and it raises a question in this modern world where there have been so many whistleblowers and reports about hybrids and clones. Is it possible that what was retrieved from a crash in 47 somewhere in the Roswell region was literally a hybrid that was part human and part extraterrestrial?
I don't know. Is it possible that this is a hybrid? Yeah, it's possible. In 1947, 1949, after the atomic bomb exploded, we know that they came. Probably they were here before, and they made a hybridization before. But it's something that we cannot establish. Probably after we present this, will come more evidence. I cannot tell you. I don't know if it's a hybrid or it's not.
I understand that the photographer and the one who had all of these slides was Mrs. Ray, who was a friend of President Eisenhower's?
Well, we think that because this investigation of Kilda Blair Ray was done by Adam Dew. She seems to be a very remarkable woman. She seems to be one of a kind. I mean, she was a pilot, she was a lawyer, and she was married to a very well-known man who was an engineer related to the oil industry and to the geologists in 1947. They divorced in the 1960s. She stayed alone until she died in 1988.
Do you have any idea where Mrs. Ray took the photograph of this extraterrestrial entity?
No, we don't know exactly. We are trying to find out. I mean, probably after we present this, we will have witnesses, I hope, that will tell us exactly where they were taken. Probably new pictures will come out of this.
Well, don't you think the implication is that Mrs. Ray and her husband were good friends with President Eisenhower?
That's what we think.
Do you think it's likely that it was President Eisenhower who arranged for Mrs. Ray to go photograph this extraterrestrial?
Linda, we think. What we can say is that we are going to present pictures from 1947 to 1949, something that doesn't look human, and that there are witnesses who claim that they saw these kind of creatures inside the hangar in Roswell in 1947. That's what we can say for sure.
Can you please describe the witness that you have in the hangar?
Well, it's a man, 88 years of age. What is amazing is this man arriving to the place, driving his car. He is absolutely lucid. He is intelligent. He remembers everything.
Like what happened when he went into the hangar? What did he see?
He was called to the hangar. They asked him not to look at anything in particular, to forget about what he was going to see, and that the security, there were people with guns, and everybody was very nervous, especially the smell. He always recalled the smell. He said it was vomiting.
And how many extraterrestrial bodies were in the hangar when he watched them with the military?
The only thing he mentioned is that one of them was alive. He didn't say how many. We think there were four. And he questions why there was one creature injured. Why did they take this creature to a hangar instead of a hospital?
Right. And how did he know the creature was alive?
He remembers one of the creatures was moving and was alive.
Was he there when the military did something to move that live being away?
He said, I didn't want to remember, I didn't want to look. He was a 20-some-year-old military man. He wanted to follow orders, but finally he did look.
He looked at the two slides that you have from Mrs. Ray's collection.
Yes.
And he said what?
He said, this is what I saw. But it's different because I saw them alive, and this creature is clearly dead.
In your Cinco de Mayo presentation, you're going to show the Kodachrome 1947 slides as they exist and then you're going to project them in a holographic form?
That is correct.
How will you do that?
Well, we have the technology now in Mexico, as you do in the States. We are going to take from the picture the exact features of the creature. This is going to be different, is that we will make the creature walk, move, and allow people to understand this creature.
In the holograms that you're going to show in your Cinco de Mayo presentation in Mexico City, what is the height of the being and what is the diameter of the head, the length of the arms, the torso, and the legs?
Well, the height is around 4 feet. The head is large. The arms are very thin and long. The legs are longer than that. And all of them and the creature itself is very thin.
How many fingers and toes?
I think we have count 4 fingers because of the position in the picture.
And Jaime, why did you decide to wait from December of 2014 to May 5th, 2015 to make this presentation?
We have a venue of 10,000 people, and I want to be sure that it's going to be filled out. You need time and promotion.
Jaime, if this creature that you have illustrated from the Kodachrome slides from 47 is a legitimate non-human entity, maybe several, that were taken out of one or more crashed extraterrestrial vehicles in the Roswell region in 47, why do you think that the large black-eyed gray types began to dominate everything in the public from the Betty and Barney Hill case in 1961 onward?
I don't know. I don't know how many different creatures are visiting us, but I think what is important is the evidence that we are presenting.
Jaime, in all of the investigations that you have done for 3.5 decades or so, when you look at those Kodachrome slides and you're looking at a being that is neither human nor gray, something unknown and alien, what goes through your own mind about the nature of what you're looking at and what its relationship to the grays might be?
Well, what I feel is that I am in front of something really extraordinary. Roswell was real.
And George, just before we go to the break, mm-hmm. I want to underscore, Jaime raised a question from the interviewee with the 88-year-old man who said that he had been at Roswell when the beings were in a hangar and that the smell made him want to vomit.
Please.
It was July 1947 that the mortician in Roswell was Glenn Dennis. He talked with a nurse who told him that the reason that they started an autopsy on these three strange entities from a crash in the hospital, and that the smell was so horrible that the doctors were afraid of the hospital being contaminated, and so they moved the autopsies into a Roswell Army airfield hangar.
Dennis is still alive, too, I think.
That's right.
Man, he's up there. He's got to be 90, I would guess, or pretty darn close to that. Linda, we're going to come back in a moment, and we'll wrap it up with part two of this incredible story. And then in the final hour, it'll be Conversations with Linda Moulton Howe. And by the way, don't forget to like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at coasttocoastam.com. Next hour, we shall take your phone calls with Linda Moulton Howe. We call it Conversations with Linda. And when we come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM, we'll go to part two of this incredible story of these Kodachrome slides that they'll be unveiling, talking about on May 5th. And welcome back to Coast. Linda, what are the possibilities of getting you on May 5th with Jaime Masson in a little special report here on the program?
Well, I think that's a great idea. Let's try to organize it.
Let's work on that. Okay, great. And let's finish up with this report. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, in 2014, remember that I did reports on Coast and Earth Files with Helen Luttrell about her daughter living with a hybrid in
yes.
Sacramento.
Great story.
Yeah, and then we had Anthony Sanchez in about his book, UFO Highway, also about a hybridization program. The common denominator, U.S. Air Force colonels, the time period beginning in the 1950s, and this was the most detailed that I had been exposed to, but the idea that our government had known for a long time that hybrids and hybridization is a big part of what we'll call the non-human presence on this planet. So now that question was raised to Jaime about whether or not he's looking at something that matches what the Interplanetary Phenomena Unit report said, that these were basically childlike in proportion, even though Tom Carey had used the term insect. So we had mixed ideas here. But the question about hybrids that were proposed by Helen Littrell and Anthony Sanchez as being a much bigger part of the extraterrestrial or non-human presence on Earth is the context of this half hour's report, leaving that question still hanging in the air. If the slides that Jaime is going to show in Mexico City on May 5th, 2015, look like a 3.5 to 4 foot little child, that is what was described in the Interplanetary Phenomena Unit July 22nd, 1947. So with that as kind of a context, of what, how big is the role of hybridization, and that the definition of hybrid is part human and part extraterrestrial, with none of us knowing precisely what the percentages are, except that it fits in the category of genetic manipulation. So now, last year, a book was published entitled Force Fields, Alien Visitations to a Planet Living in the Dark. And the author is 59-year-old Wade Vernon. He's a resident of Austin, Texas. His book details experiences that he has had since childhood in this UFO mystery. And like many people in the human abduction syndrome, early childhood is when interactions with ETs began. And for Wade, it was age 3. The first and probably most important interaction to the rest of his life. But he did not remember anything about it until much later. What did shock him and convince Wade that UFOs were real was a star-like object that seemed to jump in seconds from the night sky to outside his bedroom window. Close up, it was a disc-shaped craft that emitted intensely bright white light, and he estimated only 20 feet from him. It was Friday, October 11th, 1968, in Houston, Texas. Wade would have his 12th birthday in a month. It was after midnight. His parents were asleep, and Wade was listening to his transistor radio when static crackling interfered. And then the radio went dead, even with new batteries. Wade wondered what was wrong. Then he thought about getting one of his telescopes to look at stars from his bedroom window. What happened next would change Wade Vernon from a kid who loved astronomy and UFO stories to a young man who knew that UFOs were physical craft from outer space because he interacted with one. Wade's growing curiosity about what happened to him in October 1968 led to hypnosis in his early 20s that cracked open the shocking revelation that when he was 3 years old in 1959, he not only was taken, but his blood and immune chemistry might have been altered by entities on purpose who were not from Earth. Here now is Wade Vernon about his vivid close-up encounter that convinced him UFOs were someone's intelligent machine.
The real clincher for me was, a few weeks later, a close-up sighting in Houston, and that was, I believe it was on the 12th of October, on a Friday night. I'd gone to bed late, and at the time I had two telescopes. I was what you might call a young astronomer, and I was doing stuff like observing Jupiter sometimes for 2 weeks in a row every night, where I was using with a Barlow lens, I had something like 480 power magnification for this thing, and it was maybe 1230 or so, late night, early morning. And so I knelt up on my bed, pulled the curtains open, and I had a large picture window. I looked out over the neighbor's yard and into the woods and forests of our neighborhood. And for whatever reason, after just a minute or so of looking out there, I just had this really unusual, almost like words in my head, look straight up. And I put my head against the window and turned my head upside down to look up over the eaves of the house. And suddenly, this thing's coming down. When I say thing, a brilliant light with the lights around it that seemed to have the apparent magnitude of a star. And within 15 to 20 seconds, as it was coming down, it got bigger and bigger, and it was over the roof of neighbor's house. And as it came down, it went from looking like a ball of light to a disc. And the disc had spinning lights around the perimeter, red and silver and white lights. The disc itself was glowing extraordinarily brilliant white, brighter than a full moon. And what really made it extremely shocking, it would go on a trajectory from point A to point B with no motion in between. In other words, it would disappear at one point up in the sky as I'm looking out and reappear way off to the other side of the rooftop because it was getting so close up. And I was really pretty freaked out. And as it came down lower and lower and lower, the white light that was emanating from this thing was so brilliant, became the only reality, meaning as it came closer, I mean, I'm talking about 20 feet away from me at its closest point. The light had the sense of a machine that was conscious, a machine that was something beyond what we have, but that there was a profound intelligence behind whatever was operating this. And I blacked out. I blacked out with my eyes wide open. As I was blacking out, I said the words very slowly out loud, "Oh my God," because it was overwhelming. You know, in the dead of night in the memorial area of the woods, this quiet, sleepy suburb, for this thing to do this was just so crazy bizarre. There were so many trees. None of the trees were fluttering from any kind of backdraft or any kind of rush of propulsion. There was no rush of air at all. No noise whatsoever.
When you were finally able to start penetrating what happened when you blacked out October 12, 1968, what emerged? What unfolded?
Well, we would have to fast forward to the summer of 1979. I was in Austin and was working between semesters in college. Just on my lunch break, on the spur of the moment, I pulled out a Yellow Pages. And so I looked under psychologists. And for whatever reason, the name Dr. Edmund Bezerghi popped out. He's still alive. I got his permission to use his name in the book. I was able to regress with him very easily. I mean, he was really good. So in the first session, I'm back at the window, 1968, October, in Houston, and the object's coming down. The lights around the perimeter were flashing almost as though in the cadence of the beat of my heart. Bum, 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 bum. Boom, boom, boom. And they were alternating clockwise and counterclockwise. I'm completely scared to death. Things coming down. I can't move. I wanted to run and yell and wake up my family. I wanted everybody to see this. But I really couldn't do it. I was frozen at that windowsill. What came up hypnotically had the sense of information transmitting into me. And that's partly why this thing was so close up.
Wade Vernon had been nearing puberty in that October 1968 close encounter with the large white glowing what he sensed was an intelligent machine. Wade also wanted to know what was behind nightmares that haunted him. In that first hypnosis, he went back to age 3 in 1959. He was playing outdoors in the woods some distance from his house.
At age 3, I was on my own way out there. And an object came down. As far as the actual shape of it, it seemed to be like, I don't know if you recall the TV show The Invaders, but they had that classic kind of bell bottom shaped like a conical tower with a flared out rim. And that's very much what this looked like. It had flashing lights and didn't seem to be making noise. And there was an opening. Part of me wanted to just run, but part of me went with it and walked into this opening. Beyond that was being on a table, just like in the nightmares, not being able to move and having these creatures that didn't look like anything that I'd seen, clearly not human, and I was on a table and I could not move. It seemed as though there were things in each arm when I was on that table, as in pumping in and pumping out. what was so shocking about the regression was that I had tubing in each arm.
You had tubing in each of your three-year-old arms?
Correct.
And that the tubing was downloading fluid into you and extracting fluid from you?
Correct. It just seemed to be related to blood products.
Can you now describe what it was that you remember seeing?
The first was just suddenly being very, very large, curved area, like a huge round room, really huge, like with a perspective of walls curving off into the distance. And on the perimeter of this huge round space of divided areas that were glassed in, like a bunch of observation terrariums. And the closest one, as I walked up, had this entity that was some kind of bizarre mutation between an octopus with tentacles around a face. My sense was that this vessel was an ark, and that the reason I saw this strange mutated entity was as an introduction to the reality, whether they're collecting species so that they're protected. That was my sense of what they were showing me when I was walking around after I was off the table, the ark.
Do you think it is possible that you and others who have been in the human abduction syndrome are hybrids, part ET and part human?
Wow. It's really funny to me that you say that, because my sense of all these products that were taken out of my blood, and there's just no doubt to me that they were, and that they happened when I was three on the table. And since there was a perception of both arms and a perception of one arm pumping out and one arm pumping in at age three, I would have to say something was altered. And what that is or what might be later on, I don't know. That was the first primary phase. And then when I was 11, because I was already modified somehow, that made me the subject that was ready for the transmission.
Betty Andreessen, in her work that Raymond Moody wrote into the Watcher series of books, she illustrated being in a room in what looked like transparent, crystal-like enclosures. In there, she said that there was a sample of every human in every clothing in all of these different transparent glass or crystal-looking cubicles. And she had the impression that the non-humans dealing with her were collecting every seed genetically in sperm and egg, as well as seeds in the botanical area, preserved in suspended animation, an example of every human type on Earth.
In fact, my reality essentially is that we are genetically engineered. Whether the experiment's not going right or what, I don't know. But again, it plays into the idea of the ark. My sense is there's clearly a dark element out there. We've been protected, partly, I think, because we've been coached on really high-tech weapon systems and protective systems. I think we've been coached by benevolent off-worlders. At some point in the future, when the time is right, somehow we come together. And whether that means we've been pre-programmed with information we'll need to assist with what's going to happen, or if somehow we work together and have information almost like a special access project where each person only has one little piece of it and they don't know what the whole piece is until all of them are brought together.
And so now in your 50s, with working as a professional hypnotherapist and having done these regressions, as we are doing this interview in February of 2015, you still do not have any conscious understanding of what was transmitted into you on October 12, 1968.
Only that it left me with a sense of a vessel, as in information like a library, to be stored. And why that would be with some kid who had the experience of three, you know, why that happens again later on, I don't know. I guess if you put it in a different perspective, it would almost be like a lab rat trying to figure out why he's being yanked out at different times and put into different experiments. Really, to me, that seems to be part of the thrust of what's going on, is that kids and these people who have these repetitive encounters, there are some sort of experiments going on which we don't fully comprehend.
Now, by age 13, when he was just getting into puberty, Wade's parents had taken him to an allergy specialist at Tulane University School of Medicine. And the reason was this the three-year-old started growing with more and more and more allergies constantly year by year by year. It was beginning to be life-threatening. And in his book, Force Fields, Wade Vernon wrote, quote, "The doctor was surprised that I reacted to everything that they tested me for except for salt water. In fact, Wade went into anaphylactic shock during the allergy testing, and the doctor had to administer adrenaline to keep his heart going. A few weeks later, the allergist told Wade and his mom, quote, "You are severely allergic because your blood is missing a huge number of antibodies that most of us have naturally. It's almost as if all the antibodies have been filtered out of your blood," close quote. After his 1979 hypnosis breakthrough, Wade has always wondered if the non-humans who put the tubes in his three-year-old arms were deliberately changing his blood and immune chemistry and taking his antibodies for an alien need or experimentation. Even further is the possibility that specific humans are targeted in the human abduction syndrome and that they are already genetically altered as part human and ET hybrids, as Helen Luttrell encountered through her blind daughter with the ET human hybrid in the college dorm apartment that was introduced to Helen by the U.S. Air Force colonel, and that the issue of already genetically altered part human and ET hybrids is that question. Has there been implants? Have there been chemistry changes that are part of an ongoing mysterious dynamic between extraterrestrials and Homo sapiens sapiens? And Betty Andreessen Luca, who I once sat across the table from her, watching her pound her arm and say, "Linda, the key to all of this is in our very blood." And she, in the books that she did with Ray Fowler that included the Andreessen Affair and The Watchers, she said, quote, "The Watchers have spliced into the human seed to prolong the form. They have been collecting every species and every gender of plant for hundreds of years so that nothing will be lost when the last shall come." This was a quote. And in her drawing of the crystal chambers that are so much like what Wade Vernon saw or remembered in hypnosis from his three-year-old encounter with the tubes in his arms, Betty Andreessen has these transparent kind of cubicles about which she said, quote, "The people of all races and times are encased in clear rectangular receptacles for preservation by the non-human beings that she called the Watchers, who, quote, have monitored the earth for thousands of years," close quote. So out of all of this, it is this continual mixed message that some things might be trying to protect and preserve, while other things may be trying to harvest for their own self-serving gains. And that we humans, as long as we are left in the dark about all of this, have no idea, which is why I think that something hugely important has happened in the John Burroughs effort to leverage open the truth about what happened to him in RAF Bentwaters, and that our whole planet needs to know all of the truth that the governments have.
And we're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM with a final hour conversations with Linda.